So tonight we're looking at 2 Kings chapter 6 verses 24 all the way through to chapter 7 verse 20. And I've titled tonight, Patience is a Virtue. So please be patient with me. So don't need to look it up because the verse, you can look it up if you want in the Pew Bibles, but I've put it up on the screens just because I quite like the translation, the New Living Translation. So feel free to follow along if you'd like, but it's on the screens. I'll read it as well, actually, because I'll probably not follow on if I follow my notes. Right. So sometime later, however, King Ben-Hadad of Aram mustered his entire army and besieged Samaria. As a result, there was a great famine in the city. The siege lasted so long that a donkey's head sold for 80 pieces of silver and a cup of dove's dung sold for 5 pieces of silver. It's good stuff tonight, people. One day, as the king of Israel was walking along the wall of the city, a woman called to him, "Please help me, my lord, the king." He answered, "If the Lord doesn't help you, what can I do? I have neither food from the threshing floor nor wine from the press to give you." But then the king asked, "What is the matter?" She replied, "This woman said to me, 'Come on, let's eat your son today.'" Told you. "Let's eat your son today, then we will eat my son tomorrow." So we cooked my son and ate him. Then the next day I said to her, "Kill your son so we can eat him," but she has hidden her son. When the king heard this, he tore his clothes in despair. And as the king walked along the wall, the people could see that he was wearing burlap under his robe next to his skin. "May God strike me and kill me, even kill me, if I don't separate Elisha's head from his shoulders this very day," the king vowed. Elisha was sitting in his house with the elders of Israel when the king sent a messenger to summon him. But before the messenger arrived, Elisha said to the elders, "A murderer has sent a man to cut off my head. When he arrives, shut the door and keep him out. We will soon hear his master's step following him." While Elisha was still saying this, the messenger arrived, and the king said, "All this misery is from the Lord. Why should I wait on the Lord any longer?" Elisha replied, "Listen to this message from the Lord. This is what the Lord says. By this time tomorrow, in the markets of Samaria, 6 quarts of choice flour will cost only 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley grain will cost only 1 piece of silver." The officer assisting the king said to the man of God, "That couldn't even happen. That couldn't happen even if the Lord opened the windows of heaven." But Elisha replied, "You will see it happen with your own eyes, but you won't be able to eat any of it." Now there were 4 men with leprosy sitting at the entrance of the city gates. "Why should we sit here waiting to die?" they asked each other. "We will starve if we stay here, but with the famine in the city, we will starve if we go back there. So we might as well go out and surrender to the Aramean army. If they let us live, so much the better. But if they kill us, we would have died anyway." So at twilight, they set out for the camp of the Arameans. But when they came to the edge of the camp, no one was there. For the Lord had caused the Aramean army to hear the clatter of speeding chariots and the galloping of horses, and the sound of a great army approaching. "The king of Israel has hired the Hittites and Egyptians to attack us," they cried to one another. So they panicked and ran into the night, abandoning their tents, horses, donkeys, and everything else as they fled for their lives. When the men with leprosy arrived at the edge of the camp, they went into one tent after another, eating and drinking wine. And they carried off silver and gold and clothing and hid it. Finally, they said to each other, "This is not right. This is a day of good news, and we aren't sharing it with anyone. If we wait until morning, some calamity will certainly fall upon us. Come on, let's go back and tell the people at the palace." So they went back to the city and told the gatekeepers what had happened. "We went out to the Aramean camp," they said, "and no one was there. The horses and donkeys were tethered and the tents were all in order, but there wasn't a single person around." Then the gatekeepers shouted the news to the people in the palace. The king got out of his bed in the middle of the night and told his officers, "I know what's happened. The Arameans know we are starving, so they have left their camp and have hidden in the fields. They're expecting us to leave the city, and then they will take us alive and capture the city." One of his officers replied, "We had better send out scouts to check into this. Let them take 5 of the remaining horses. If something happens to them, it will be no worse than if they stay here and die with the rest of us." So 2 chariots with horses were prepared, and the king sent scouts to see what happened to the Aramean army. They went all the way to the Jordan River, following a trail of clothing and equipment that the Arameans had thrown away in their mad rush to escape. The scouts returned and told the king about it. Then the people of Samaria rushed out and plundered the Aramean camp. So it was true that 6 quarts of choice flour were sold that day for 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley grain were sold for 1 piece of silver, just as the Lord had promised. The king appointed his officer to control the traffic at the gate, but he was knocked down and trampled to death as the people rushed out. So everything happened exactly as the man of God had predicted when the king came to his house. The man of God had said to the king, "By this time tomorrow in the markets of Samaria, 6 quarts of choice flour will cost 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley grain will cost 1 piece of silver." The king's officer had replied, "That couldn't happen even if the Lord opened the windows of heaven." And the man of God had said, "You will see it happen with your own eyes, but you won't be able to eat any of it. And so it was, for the people trampled him to death at the gate. That's some passage. I found it really hard to read that the first time round, so much so that I actually wanted to phone John and ask for a different passage. How come I get the week with cannibalism? But you know what? The passage is pretty, well, I want to say amazing, but I don't think that quite does it any good. The passage is pretty eye-opening. Stop for a second and think of a time when you felt things were hard. Now think about another time when you lost hope. Think of a time when you burst out into a rage against someone, but maybe not because they directly done something to you. I don't know about you, but when I think of times in my life when I was at my wit's end, and then I read this passage, I feel kind of lucky. Blessed that I wasn't there. I was talking to my mum recently, and we were talking about our businesses. As most of you'll know, I've had my own business for 12 years now, and my parents have their own business as well, and they've had that for about 20 years. So my mum and I talk about all kinds of business things, dealing with customers, chasing invoices, dealing with money, or the lack of it. And one of the nice things is that we also talk about how our faith in God's provision is tied up into this as well. We see it in our lives so predominantly because when things are tight, we really rely on God to get us through. So there was a time, quite a few years back now, when I was down to my last £30 in the bank. Actually, I was into the sort of the negative side of the bank account, you know, that overdraft that's the buffer, and I had £30 left. And I was panicking. This is not unusual for me, I'm a worrier. But I was really, really panicking. If one bill had come off, that would have been me. I'd had nothing left. There was no work in sight. And I can't, the nature of my business is that I kind of just have to wait for somebody to need a t-shirt printed or something embroidered. And I'm very chuffed to see Andy and Charlie wearing my products tonight. So, but the thing is, though, it was to that point that I really was tossing in the towel. That was it. I was done. And my dad was in the shop. And my dad's amazing. His catchphrase to me, his sort of mantra is, if you don't see me panicking, don't you panic, which is really funny because I'm in a flap about everything. But I prayed, and I probably prayed a lot before that point, and I probably prayed a lot after that point. And I can't remember what I prayed, but I know I prayed because it's kind of built into me to go to God when things get a bit scary, especially with my business. Thankfully, not long after that, within the day, I think, I had some business coming in. And money was coming then, not having to chase invoices. But I really believe that God was wanting me to just trust in him because I was so ready for packing it in. Just even the thought of it now just makes me kind of nervous. But from then, from that point on, things have grown and I've really been blessed with that. But for me, that is probably one of my lowest points. And I'm so, so grateful for the fact that I wasn't there with them, because for me, looking at that, I feel like that was a walk in the park, what I went through. You know, it's nothing compared to that passage. But I was on the point of not necessarily losing faith, but just losing hope. And I really think that's what this passage is all about. Samaria is the middle kingdom in Israel, and it's under siege. And they've been under siege so long that everything, nothing lasted. They ran out of everything. None of their provisions were there now. It was so bad that a donkey, which was a valuable animal, was being sold. And not even the good bits, it was its head. You know, And the grain that was left was so bad, it was called dove's dung. Just what is that about? And I'm sorry, I can't think of a way to put this more eloquently than it gives me the boke to think of that. And I was reading one thing that said it could have been this. It is dove's dung is a thing that they sell in Cairo for people who are on pilgrimage to Mecca. But it could have been so desperate that they were actually selling dung. That's how bad it was. It may not even have been this poor quality grain. It could have been dung. Nope. Anyway, things are bad for the king and his people. The king, though, seems to be trying to muddle through. So much so that when a lady approaches him and cries for him to help, I'm in two minds about what his reply actually is. Is it sarcastic? If the Lord doesn't help you, what can I do? Or is he trying to hold on to the last shred of faith that he has? No. Let the Lord help you. How can I help you? I'm not quite sure. But in my opinion, one shows a man. The sarcastic one shows a man at the end of his thread already. He's had enough. The other one maybe shows a facade of faithfulness, a grasping, a desperateness, trying to hold on to just whatever's left. I can't help you, only God can. But both are broken severely when he asks her his next question. What's the matter with you? Can you blame him? Do you think he was expecting her to reply that she was duped into eating her own son? And how desperate must she have been to go to the king and actually want him to hunt down the woman that caused her to eat her own son? Please, sir, please, we're so hungry, but she's hiding her kid. We need to eat it because that was the deal. How badly must he have felt as a leader for that typical request to have been made of you? Ever happen at vestry, you know? No, that's good. Not yet. I just couldn't imagine that being the request. Please help me find this woman so we can eat her child. Our child. What would you do? I just can't imagine. I lose all words at this point. My heart breaks. I can't even fathom it. And I pray to God that I am never, ever, ever in a situation that even closely resembles that. Never. And I don't have kids, so it would be my dog. Not just... Nah. No, they're just too desperate. Both of the situations are, whether he's being sarcastic or whether he's just grasping, both situations are desperate. And then to be faced with this, I think I'd snap too. Becoming murderous doesn't seem so shocking when somebody's making that request of you. But that's how bad it is. They're maybe eating dung, they're definitely eating children. I think going to Elisha and wanting to kill him makes sense in the context of this passage. Because what would your reaction be if someone said to you, patience is a virtue, this time tomorrow, things will be completely different? I think I'd want to scream. I know I'd definitely want to hit him. I wouldn't want to hear that. In fact, it's probably the very last thing any of us would want to hear when we're in such a tiz, when we're in such a flap, and you know you're getting your ire up. So I can understand where the king's coming from. But when Elisha says to him, this time tomorrow, everything will be fine, Elisha is right. Oh, how we hate to hear people who are right. The king's right-hand man makes a reply that we can understand, but he really shouldn't have said it. Not if we'd have had the same faith that Elisha had. God can't do that. Even if he opened up heaven's grain stores and poured them out on us, God couldn't do this. How much of a brass neck must he have had to talk to a prophet of God and to tell him what God can't do? Who does this guy think he is? The passages that we've been looking at over the last couple of weeks all seem to have people just at the back of somebody with a bit of power who seem to think really well of themselves. And it's their downfall. And especially this guy, because, spoiler alert, he gets killed. I like having a snarky retort to some things. Seems appropriate at times. But I think this is the lesson where you learn, shut up, hold your tongue, and stay quiet. Don't question God's power. And he could have done what the Israelites, God could have done for the Israelites what he'd done for them when they were in the desert with Moses. And this is maybe what this guy was thinking of, where he opened up heaven's grain stores and poured manna down on them, and they were fed. But this wouldn't have solved their problem. You know, remember the big army sitting outside the city walls waiting to attack? Hunger wasn't their only problem, but it was all they could see, and this was their downfall. God had a plan, and Elisha knew this. God's plan would have had needed time to work itself out. If the king of Aram was to believe that Israel had time to pull in help from the Hittites and Egypt, then this would have been something that would have taken time to organize, to sort out. Why else would they be waiting so long? Why else would they be holed up and starving in their city unless they had a plan? Surely they weren't going to just sit there and wait and die? thank goodness the Aramean king didn't know any better. The thing I've loved about the series that we've been looking at from 2 Kings is the people that we look at. The people in the passages that are brought to our attention to consider. So I'm not changing from this because I think I don't see why we need to break the mold at this point. And I don't really know how to relate to a city under siege. And starving is not something I kind of have much experience with. Definitely not for me anyway. But people I can understand, and human nature I get. So we've already looked at the king of Israel. In such dire circumstances, I can relate to how he's thinking. His choices and reactions don't seem alien. And let me add, though, I've never felt murderous. Yet. All the same, though, if we look at his initial response to the woman, the possible sarcasm of a man that maybe doesn't believe God can help, and if we've never said something like it ourselves, we've probably heard someone ask us, "Where's your God now?" Or if it's read as a man trying hard to hold on to his faith, "I can't help you here, only God can." The almost desperation of a man trying to believe in something bigger. And then his reaction to an abhorrent situation. I think of the news recently that we're hearing and the stuff that's happening in America. The images of the children crying as they're separated from their families. And families being held, and the people that are left being held in cages. People are crying out for justice for them. And I haven't been able to bring myself to watch some of the footage. Because I can't, what can I do? That sense of uselessness as I sit crying at these horrible, horrible things. And the powerlessness that I feel because I can't make a change. And that's me only watching the news. So yeah, I think I can understand where the king's coming from. And then there's Elisha. We don't hear much of him in this passage. And we don't get told the full details of what he's doing while all of this is going on. Yet from what we are told, the first impression that I got was that he was maybe just waiting patiently on God. But then I Googled the phrase elders of Israel because I didn't know what significance that had. But these are the elders from all the tribes. 70 people, 6 from each tribe. That's not just a cozy gathering. This is Israel waiting to hear what God has to say to Elisha. So why isn't the king with them? Well, we don't know. But I think he's not at the meeting because he's totally lost his faith. No point in waiting to hear from God when we're all going to die anyway. The elders of Israel and Elisha are the only small glimmer of hope that is actually able to be read in this passage. Everyone else you hear from has just given up. Even the lepers have decided that their best hope is to fall on the mercy of their enemies on the off chance that they might be kind or make death come quicker. How bleak an outlook is that? Upside is we may be saved. Consolation prize, we won't have to kick it with the rest of them that are starving. Really great hope. But when they get there, the Syrians are gone. It must have felt like walking into a supermarket knowing that you've got a pound left till payday to feed yourself. You're so resigned to living on pasta and butter, then find the reduced section is full of 5p, it's full, everything's reduced to 5p, and you realise you can feed yourself for a week. Only me. Right, anyway, that's awkward. But the joy and the relief and the sense of gratitude that those guys must have felt when they would have just been unbelievable. They ran into tents, eating and drinking. They're gathering up gold and silver. They're burying some of it, even like having a party. Then realizing that this needs to be shared. The outcasts thought of others. How often is that the case? So they didn't keep it to themselves. They went and told the folks back at the city. The king's faith is so out of sorts, it's flatlining, that he can't believe it. And he's so skeptical that they send scouts out to check it out. Elisha was right. Patience is a virtue. God was already working. Even when those that were watching the Syrian army to move, watching for the Syrian army to move, they missed it. God was already working. Within a day, Samaria went from selling donkey's heads and dove's dung for 6 months' wages to having so much that the price plummeted, to the extent that it caused a riot at the city gate because people wanted to buy food, possibly before it ran out again. The last thing in this passage is the king's right-hand man getting given the job to control the city gate. He was well trusted. But the last passage, they repeat Elisha's prophecy about God's provision, and the right-hand man sneering at God's ability to do such a thing. And he sees it, he sees it all. And then he's trampled to death, just as prophesied. The last part is a warning for us. Not that we're going to be killed for scoffing at God and what he can do, although don't quote me on that, so don't take chances. No, the warning is don't put limits on God. Our minds may see things one way, and they're logical and they're rational, but they're limited. The king and his officer went to kill Elisha and wanted the hunger in the city to be dealt with by God, but God wanted them to have their freedom. God doesn't want us just to have a little. He wants us to have everything. So think back to what I said at the start. Stop for a second and think of a time when you felt things were hard. Now think of another time when you lost hope. Think of a time when you burst out in a rage at someone, and maybe not even because it was directly something they'd done to you. Close your eyes. Now think of a God that loves you unconditionally. Think of a God that wants to be a mother and a father to you. Think of a God that wants to see you nurtured, provided for, protected, and loved. For every hardship you've faced, hand it to God now. Don't hold on, and don't put limits on him. Whatever you're needing from God at this moment, ask for it. Say it out loud or speak it quietly, but ask. Wait patiently for him. No matter if it's the first time or the 100th time. Keep your eyes closed while I read Psalm 118 for you. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His faithful love endures forever. Let all Israel repeat, his faithful love endures forever. Let Aaron's descendants, the priests, repeat, his faithful love endures forever. Let all who fear the Lord repeat, his faithful love endures forever. In my distress, I prayed to the Lord, and the Lord answered me and set me free. The Lord is for me, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? Yes, the Lord is for me. He will help me. I will look in triumph at those who hate me. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in people. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. Though hostile nations surrounded me, I destroyed them all with the authority of the Lord. Yes, they surrounded and attacked me, but I destroyed them all with the authority of the Lord. They swarmed around me like bees. They blazed against me like a crackling fire, but I destroyed them all with the authority of the Lord. My enemies did their best to kill me, but the Lord rescued me. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has given me victory. Songs of joy and victory are sung in the camp of the godly. The strong arm of the Lord has done glorious things. The strong right arm of the Lord has raised in triumph. The strong right arm of the Lord has done glorious things. I will not die. Instead, I will live to tell what the Lord has done. The Lord has punished me severely, but he did not let me die. Open for me the gates where the righteous enter, and I will go in and thank the Lord. These gates lead to the presence of the Lord, and the godly enter there. I thank you for answering my prayer and giving me victory. The stone that the builder rejected has now become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing, and it is wonderful to see. This is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Please, Lord, please save us. Please, Lord, please give us success. Bless the one who comes in the name of the Lord. We bless you from the house of the Lord. The Lord is God, shining upon us. Take the sacrifice and bind it with cords on the altar. You are my God, and I will praise you. You are my God, and I will exalt you. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His faithful love endures forever. And so to finish, I'd really like us to sing a last song, which I think, when I was reading these verses from Psalm 118, was really stuck in my head. So that's how we'll finish.